Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Lickin. It's good to have you with us again. It is September 26th and Monday noon here in Central Texas. It's another hot one here. As I read about many of the message blogs, some of you are starting to enjoy some cooler weather across the country, and we're just a little bit envious. About 105 here yesterday, so. But let's see what's going on in the markets here in just a minute. Hey, a special note goes out to Gary Lacey and the folks from Mortgage Brokers Network Corp. You can go to their website, mortgagebrokersnetwork.com. Take a look at there. They've put our radio program up on their website for their customers and those that are following them to look at. So we appreciate that, Gary, very much. And also, at the point, many of you that are listening to the program, regular listeners, you may find this to be valuable for you to put up on your website. And it's easy to do. If you have any questions, call us. We won't get into a training on how to do that now. But anyway, appreciation to Gary and his crew there at the Mortgage Brokers Network. Go check them out, www.mortgagebrokersnetwork.com. Good to have you with us again this week. We've got a lineup of a really important topic today. We're going to be talking later in the program with David Souders of with Mitch, works closely with Mitch Kider, and we're so excited to have him on the program talking about when you make a move as a loan officer or as a branch to another company, or if you're recruiting someone to move to your shop, what are the do's and don'ts? What legal risks can you take on without knowing it? So we're going to be talking about that very important, timely topic with so many people moving around out there. But without any further ado, let's get to another hot topic, and that's interest rates. Interest rates are up and down and around and through. Joe Farr is with us each and every week to bring us an update. Let's find out what's going on today. Joe,
hey,
good to have you on the radio. Good to hear you.
MBS prices aren't as hot as the weather is.
Yes,
we're down.
Look like it.
We're down 7/32 on the day. No economic news came out today. Over the weekend, there was some... it was kind of interesting where we got favorable results from the promise to do more in Europe. So, you know, they just met and they said, well, now we're going to go back to each of the individual nations' governments to get them to approve what we have decided we should try to approve. So, you know, that so much focus lately has been on Europe that any and everything that they do seems to be causing movement. Yeah, stocks are up a little bit, and MBS prices are down today.
Well, it's we got more of that going on. Let's talk about last week. It was a wild one.
Boy, it was a wild one. Most of the activity happened on Wednesday after the Fed meeting announcement came out. They announced several things that were all very good for mortgage-backed security prices, and mortgage rates fell substantially on the news. In fact, MBS prices were up almost a point, over a point and a half, on the news on Wednesday. And what they said, Dave, was, well, three things. First of all, they said that the economy has significant downside risks. And, you know, that's not good when you hear the Fed saying that.
Yep.
So that gave investors, you know, concern about stocks. Stocks fell heavily that day and the next day, and cause more people to come to invest in longer-term mortgage-backed securities. And then the other two things that they said had to do with, you know, investments in long-term fixed-rate securities, much like a mortgage-backed security and a long-term treasuries. Two things. First of all, they're going to implement what is being called Operation Twist, where they're going to sell short-term, some of their investments in short-term treasuries, and they're going to turn around and buy longer-term treasuries, right? And that's going to put more demand in the market for the longer-term treasuries, which should be favorable for longer-term government-guaranteed mortgage-backed securities. And then the other thing is directly associated or related to investments in mortgage-backed securities. They currently hold about $885 billion worth of agency MBS. And you'll recall
That's right.
QE1 was to buy, I guess they bought ultimately $1.2 trillion. They've had some runoff of that. And they have runoff all the time and probably runoff faster with rates at these levels because of prepayments than in the past. I know in the last year they had $200 billion runoff. Well, now, let me back up. In the past, they have been reinvesting that money. So their balance sheet isn't shrinking when they receive payoff proceeds on a mortgage-backed security. They've been investing that in treasuries. All right. Now they're going to start reinvesting that in mortgage-backed securities. So, you know, at a time when refinances are heavy, originations are going to be plentiful. They're going to be a buyer to the extent that that their portfolio runs off. So that'll make for a good demand.
Yes. Yeah. It should hopefully put some strength back into that. I mean, not that they're that weak, but given what's going on out there, I think that's an overall positive. So.
Well, but with yields in the mid to low threes for you got to ask how much demands are going to be out there. So
and to quote that Limbo song, how low can we go, and how low will it go and continue to attract investors? But when you look at a flight to quality, is there anything really that much better in the marketplace than mortgage backed securities? So hopefully that'll be the case.
That's where the world's looking right now.
That's what it looks like. All right. So what do we got? See, any more on last week? And then as we look
at there's really not a lot of economic news came out last week. And that had much to do with the market anyway. This week we have treasury auctions. Two of them are the shorter term. And so it'll be curious to see how those were received given Operation Twist. And so we have the 2, the 5, and the 7 starting tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. Durable orders comes out on Wednesday and pending home sales on Thursday, along with jobless claims, which has been an important number lately. But, you know, the most important announcement next week is going to come on Friday with the core PC inflation measure. That comes out at 8:30 on Friday. And we've been seeing, that inflation number tick up over each of the last few months. Mm-hmm. It's still a very manageable number, but the path is higher, and so we're going to be watching that inflation measure. Also on Friday, a manufacturing Chicago Purchasing Managers Index comes out Friday at, I think it's 9:45. But anyway, much focus will be on Europe, as it has been lately, and you know, those treasury auctions could be interesting.
This could be very interesting. Let's look forward to the week that we have coming up. We've got a number of things. The 2, 5, and 7-year Treasury auctions are coming up. And any idea, Joe, what those look like as far as the
Well, like we were just talking about, it, given Operation Twist, it'll be interesting to see what happens from the shorter-term Treasuries. I guess the 7 will fit in the longer-term category, but most of their purchases are going to come in the 10- and 30-year category. So we could see those auctions show higher yields, given that they will not only be no longer buying, most likely, but also selling.
Well, it's going to be another interesting week for sure. And every time they said Operation Twist, my cynical mind started going, is that because of the markets? They're anticipating the markets twisting in the wind?
I don't know.
So I don't know. But anyway, we appreciate it, Joe, so much.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you being with us each and every week, bringing us an update. I try to pay attention on all of that's going on. We've got a few things going on in the background as we have technical difficulties, but it's working well, and I appreciate it, Joe, so much. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text. text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
MBSQuoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. Appreciate you so much tuning in. And I also appreciate each and every week those that help me out on this radio program, Joe Farr, Alice Alvey, and Andy Schell, and then Tony Garrettano. We appreciate you guys being a part of this. Life comes at us. There's things that happen in life that are just we just don't ever know if you can ever prepare for it. Even if you're preparing for it, you don't know when it hits you. You don't know what to say. Alice Alvey has had yet another death in her family. Our hearts go out to her. Please lift her up in your prayers and keep her in your thoughts of mind as a family goes through yet another difficult time. It was something that was they knew was going to possibly happen here, but it happened over the weekend. So Alice is not with us, and we do remember her and her family during this time. Appreciate her contribution to this program each and every week. And if I say that because many of you have connected with Alice in such a personal way, because she is just so personable. And so she's one of the people that I just enjoy so much being a part of the radio program. It's so much fun being a part of it. So anyway, lift her up in your thoughts. Keep her in your thoughts. Lift her up in your prayers as the family goes through yet having to deal with another loss of their family. I did make a couple phone calls. I called Glenn Corso out of the moment. Hey, Glenn, what are you doing? You want to be on the radio program here in a few minutes? And he burst out laughing, and he politely declined. But he said to say hello to all you all. But he did give me some – that's a little text in there. I slipped it in there, all you all. Anyway, he did not say that. That was my version of what Glenn said. But anyway, he said there are two things that are going on out there that he would recommend that we all keep our eyes on this week, and it is that they're fighting over the fiscal budget for this next year. There is no resolution that's going on right now, but if there is no resolution by the end of this week, we could face again some government shutdown. That means it's going to impact programs at HUD, Ginnie Mae, and around aspects of the industry to the extent which is not totally, I didn't get totally figured out and clear on, but there is a distinct possibility that we face that. So we're facing another fiscal battle over raising the debt ceiling, all the issues related to that. If there is no resolution, we can anticipate some issues related to HUD and Ginnie Mae and anything related to the budget issues. The other thing that Glenn said that was on the radar screen is increasing guarantee fees. That the announcement was that they will be increasing guarantee fees in 2012. And when several made comment, are you going to address the inequities or not the inequities, the imbalance between some of the larger issuers and some of the smaller companies? And they said that they would be trying to address that. That could have some interesting ramifications on pricing if, in fact, they increase guarantee fees and they level the playing field. In other words, the guarantee fees for the smaller issuers are the same as the big boys, the big guys, the biggest of the big. That could have an impact on pricing. And so while it would be a leveling the playing field, which will be welcomed by many, it's going to have an issue related to pricing for those of you selling into the larger conduits. And because you could see that because their guarantee fees will be going up and will be on par with the smaller issuers, that you could actually see interest rates going up a bit for yourself there. The balance, the good side of that, the other side of it, and this is my commentary, not Glenn's, but is the fact that I'm sure Glenn would agree with this, but this is going to bring more of a competitive landscape to the conduits and something that we should embrace. I asked Glenn if there's any update on QM and QRM. He said there was an update on QM. They're planning to publish the QM policy Q1, first quarter of 2012. QRM, there is no update as to what's going to be happening on that. Again, like I was teasing with Glenn, I said I worked for a company that if you didn't hear a rumor by 9 o'clock, you started one. And there are only rumors running around about the fact that QRM is going to be scrapped and they're going to go back to the drawing table. And there's been no substantive discussions on that. There's reports of it, but I'd put it in the category of a rumor If you haven't heard one by 9 o'clock, you start one. So that's the rumor. Some have started by 9 o'clock in the morning. So a quick update on that. We appreciate Glenn Corso and Pete Mills over there at the Mortgage Initiative to be a part of us, our radio program. We hope to have them on the radio program again and in giving us some updates on all that's going on. Again, our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to Alice Alvey and her entire family as they deal with another loss in their family this year. It's been a tough year for them. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. It's good to have the Profit Doctor with us each and every week. And I am really excited about what he has for us this week, because I'm just opening his notes right now and reading what he's got for us. So anyway, it's going to be about accuracy. I see that. Prophet Dr. Andy Schell, good to have you be on the program here with us. Also, help working on the technology a little bit in the background. We're trying to get some things working. Appreciate that as well. You're a great support to what we're doing here, as we are to many companies as they look at the bottom line. Good to have you on the program, Andy.
Well, thanks, Dave. I was trying to get the screen up so I can see the notes coming from the producer, and I forgot about getting you the notes, so sorry about that. But, you know, one of the things that you were just talking about is getting that continuing resolution passed so that the government, at least the non-essential elements of the government, can continue. And one of the areas within the government that's considered non-essential is the IRS. So,
yeah,
you know, if it's a really non-essential element of the government, I'm all for it. You know, shut it down.
Shut it down. Yeah. Yeah. That might have other ramifications. So what do you got for us today? I know data accuracy and was one of them in the call report. I see that in some of your notes you just sent over. Good. Good. What do you got for us?
Well, today we're talking about legal risks in branch transactions. So here is a couple of my views on the financial aspects of branch transactions. You know, we talk about branches. We all know they're important. We all know the company doesn't run without production. Everybody gets this. But, you know, one of the most important aspects in a branch is its pipeline and the potential for new volume embedded in the marketing database. And so how can a mortgage company really track their most valuable asset and know with confidence the exact detail of these data files in their pipeline and marketing database? You know, how do they know? Well, I tell you, our experience is that the data management aspects of the pipeline in the marketing database is often just a second thought. You know, they'll
sadly, that is.
Yeah, you just throw anything into the pipeline, not really worry about it. The status is updated, not really necessarily take account if the information is correct. And that's on the pipeline that's driving the hedge transactions. You know, in the marketing database is not usually very well maintained. And that's one of the most key elements for a future volume is that marketing database. So the data integrity in these areas really is the cornerstone for any mortgage bank. The content of the pipeline and the content of the marketing database must be complete and accurate to protect the branch from legal risks that we're going to discuss today. You know, the whole notion of who owns the pipeline and whose application is it when it's taken, well, I'm sure we'll get into this, but it's the mortgage companies. And so how that information gets put into the system, how it's managed once it gets there, making certain all the information comes in completely, make certain that the data flow between the various systems of point into the operation systems, into the data warehouse, making sure all that stuff is run right is really, really important to protect the company. And obviously data accuracy is essential for hedging, and data integrity is essential to comply with the new call report, the NMLS call report. I'm going to talk about the call report just for a second. We've talked about it many times, but I want to touch on this topic because there's a ticking time bomb out in our industry. I don't want people to be aware about this.
Ticking time bomb.
Time bomb, yes. And for all mortgage companies that are not Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie seller, servicer, issuers. So if you're not a Fannie, Freddie seller, servicer, issuer, you've only done half the call report. People think, well, we got it filed in May, we're all good. Well, the other portion of the call report is called the financial condition report, and for many mortgage companies, that hasn't been completed yet. It hasn't been filed yet. So just as a quick refresher, the call report has four sections. There's two sections that are filed by the big companies who are Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie, seller, servicer issues, and there's two sections for everybody else. Now, the big companies who've already, the Freddie, Fannie, Ginnies, have already filed both sections of the report, although we have a couple of examples of some folks who filed it inaccurately because they just guessed on some stuff. But nevertheless, they've already filed. So they've already filed both sections, the activity report called the RMLA, and they filed the condition report, the financial condition report called the FC report. So they're done, and they got to continue doing that every quarter. For everybody else, we filed just the RMLA, the activity report. We've not filed the financial condition report. So there's a large number of companies, large number of mortgage companies out in the country right now here today who have not filed the financial condition report, and it's going to be coming up due at the end of the year. And when that report's due at the end of the year, it's going to be gnashing of teeth. It is going to be very, very difficult because this report is going to require that each lender capture and report information about the income collected on every loan that closes, specifically interim interest, all the fee income by category. And the scary issue, the issue we see with clients all around the country, is that most lenders do not capture the information in their accounting system correctly. They're either not getting the right information or they're not getting enough information. Now, another element of this that's kind of scary to me is that this new financial condition report that's never been filed by most mortgage companies yet, but will be filed soon, is going to require that they change the way they're capturing some of the detail in their payroll. So if everybody pays twice a month, that'll be 24 payrolls that are going to have to get looked at. For every single loan that's closed through the whole year, information is going to have to be gained out of that information. It's going to be really, really difficult. So just as a quick reminder, the new financial condition call report, as it relates to salary information, today most mortgage companies may report salary in one or two classifications on their general ledger. In order to do the call report correctly, they're going to have to break it out into at least six or more different categories. For sales, it has to be separate from origination fulfillment, which has to be separated from secondary marketing, which has to be separated from post-closing, which has to be separate from origination management, which has to be separate from every other category. So
no wonder there's going to be some gnashing of teeth. Yeah, no kidding.
It's going to be, and they're doing that so that because they have the RMLA and now with the financial condition report, the government's going to be able to look at this information, look at the volume that was closed, look at the compensation that was paid, and determine if the compensation levels are reasonable for that company in that region to pay originators. So they're going to be able to test how much commission originators have been paid. Today, very few companies have their accounting system set up to capture this level of detail. Now, they could. It's not that big of a job to make the change. It's just that they haven't done it because it hasn't been due yet. And once it is due, it's going to be due immediately. So many companies will have to reconstruct their books for all of the year to analyze every loan and fix every payroll. And this is going to take time, and it's going to cost a lot of money. If the report is not filed correctly, then it's considered not filed at all. And actually, knowingly filing a false report is fraud. So there's not good choices here. To make things worse, they're going to be watching. The government's going to be watching this information that's coming in. The licensing agencies are watching it. The State Department of Labor is watching. The Federal Department of Labor is watching. And the IRS, which if the government shuts down, then that'd be okay, will be watching as well. And they're calling this, there's a fancy word for it, The IRS is referring to this as an item of interest. The NMLS report is called an item of interest for the IRS and these other agencies. So they're going to be watching. They're going to be watching to make certain the report is complete, that the essential data is reported correctly. And the biggest concern is if you can't get the data fixed in time, because you got to go back through the entire year and check every single loan, your audit, because the auditors can't file it if the information is not right, and if the NMLS call report isn't filed on time because it's late, and if the auditor can't file because they don't have the data, you risk losing HUD approval and state licensing approval, all because you didn't plan a little bit better to deal with this stuff when it first happened.
Mm.
We've been talking about it all year, and you know, don't want
to
keep beating a dead horse. But like I said before, why would a dead horse care if it's getting beaten?
Hope they're not dead yet, so let's beat on this issue because it's serious. I mean, this is one that people are just kind of going by, and they're not.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Ignoring this issue results in bad and worse consequences. It's just not worth it to mess with it. So act now, modify the system. You know, we're going to be teaching a webinar on how to do this.
Yes, I was just going to go there.
Yeah, we're going to be, I think it's October the 20th. We're going to be teaching a webinar on how to fix it. Get the problems fixed. Just do it. Just get it done. Get it fixed. Get the procedures in place. Retool the accounting financial data to make sure this is done right. And then, you know, move on. But here's a caution. Here's a caution for folks. You may say, well, my accounting department's got it fixed already because, look, my financial statements look great. Well, many companies may have an accounting system that creates nice-looking financial reports. But don't underestimate the complexity of this financial condition report. It can cost a lot to reconstruct your accounting department to analyze all the data and make sure it's right. But just because the report looks good doesn't mean it's right. If they haven't made the changes I've discussed here or will on the webinar, it means they don't have enough information. But now here's the silver lining in all of this is...
There is a silver lining.
There is. It is. If you have your accounting system built to really do loan-level accounting, to capture all the information off of every loan as it closes, then you're going to have the information to be able to calculate profit per loan, profit per branch, profit per originator, and you'll be able to more effectively run your business. You're not going to have to guess and just look at volume reports. You can look at profitability reports. So it's really good. It's essential. And in my opinion, it's a requirement for survival to know your profit per loan.
Absolutely.
And your key performance indicators that come from loan-level accounting. If you don't have loan-level accounting, you're walking on a tightrope over the Grand Canyon. It's a very, very dangerous thing to do. So, you know, wrapping all this up, be sure to protect your data by having an assessment of your data integrity and have a complete change management process to keep your computer system safe and make sure your data and interfaces are tested regularly. This whole change management process we keep talking about over and over and over, and it's very complicated, but it's essential for the computers to work right and the data going into it to be right. And if you need help with it, give us a call. We'll be happy to help. It's more important that you get this right than anything else. And this is a ticking time bomb in the industry, and getting this right is going to be essential for the survival of folks, because come March 31st, when some of this stuff's due and they're not finished, people are going to wish they'd taken the time to fix it and do it right the first time. So there
you go,
Dave.
Annie,
there's the gloomy prophet, doctor.
The gloomy prophet, no, if you're a realist, it may be gloomy for those that don't prepare, but the reality is we've been talking about it for some time, and you do not have to be, be blindsided. It may feel like you're out on a tightrope over the Grand Canyon and the winds are starting to blow, but the reality is you do not have to deal with that. It reminds me of a movie I saw over the weekend. It was a great, Robert Duvall was in it. It was called 7 Days in Utopia. If you guys haven't seen the movie, I recommend it. Go watching it. Great show. And it talks about anticipating the unexpected. This is expected. We got enough we're dealing with right now that is unexpected. Folks, you do not have to have this be blindside you and take you out. It is for some. If you're struggling with it, get a hold of Prophet Doctor. You can reach him by going to our website, and we'll talk about that more in the ad in just a minute. Or get a hold of Andy. Call him on his direct line, 512-501-2812. 512-501-2812. Get a hold of Andy. He can work with you. Prophet Doctor, thank you so much for being with us. And you're going to stay on the line as we talk to David Sowers here in just a minute, are you not?
I can't wait. This is an exciting topic.
Well, it's another one of those things. Be careful what's coming because you're out recruiting. But do you know the risks? Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is David Licken. It is September 26th. 26th, my gosh, what's happened to this year? It's going so quickly. We have with us as a special guest David Souders of the law firm Wiener Brodsky, Seidman & Kider. And it's just really a privilege to have David be with us. He's located in Washington, D.C., so he's coming into us live from that part of the country, dialed in on his phone. He's sitting there at his desk. We appreciate him taking time out of his busy day. Prior to joining the firm, David spent 13 years litigating for the Department of Justice in the Civil Division. He's also a graduate of the College of the Holy Cross. After 5 years time spent there, he went, that was after he was in the Navy, and he worked on a nuclear-powered fast attack submarine. Boy, I tell you, that equipped you, David, for the mortgage industry, a fast attack submarine and working in the mortgage industry. That's great. After leaving the Navy, he went into law school at the Washington University in St. Louis. He clerked for Judge Nagel. Nagel. Yes. There at the U.S. Court in Eastern District of Missouri. David, it's good to have you on the program. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. And also, Mitch kind of threw this to you because we were inviting Mitch to come on, and he posted to you. And I had the privilege of meeting you in your office, and I'm really particularly thrilled to have you, of all the people in your firm, be here because you are a litigator. You're the one that goes in and defends a lot of the action that's going on out there. So you're actually the one presenting the arguments and preparing the cases. Am I correct?
You're correct. And actually, you got to be careful when you introduce a litigator from Washington, D.C. People tend to
I'm looking at a board. We haven't lost our audience yet. So, and I think everyone, seriously, we appreciate what you and Mitch does. Mitch gets to go around, fly around the country, and speak at a lot of the events. And I speak so highly of your firm. We really do appreciate the contribution you guys are making as a firm to our industry and the many things you're doing there, and specifically being on the regular, giving your time to the radio program. David, there are a lot of companies out there that have an aggressive branch expansion program, recruiting program. We had John on the program last week, John Traver of our firm, talking about some of the strategies on that. And we started getting into some of the legal risk, and we realized that this is really an important topic because there are some definite do's and don'ts. What are the risks when recruiting production personnel? Can you give us kind of a primer on it?
Sure. And let me just say at the outset that I've done these cases, and they are
they're
common and complicated. They ebb and flow a little bit as, you know, you see people moving, you know, around the industry. When there's a lot of movement, the number of cases ticks up, and when there isn't, they go down. But the risks are predominantly two main ones, and one that is the one that kind of bites you when you're not suspecting it. The first is obviously litigation. And I can talk a little bit more about that, but no one wants to get a call from their registered agent or the package in the mail saying they got sued. And that's, everybody...
that talk about ruining your day, that's the one that does, yeah.
Exactly. And listen, if I can accomplish one thing in the next 20 minutes, if I can give you a piece of advice that would keep you from getting that package or out of litigation, this would be worth my time because... It's a very frustrating area to litigate in because there's no point to it. You can do things to avoid it and move on.
Regulatory
is... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The second part where the regulators are starting to show some interest. They don't like a lot of movement or unsettled sort of things in the branches in their area, and they're going to look at everything very closely, including, for example, transferring of loans and things in the pipeline, and they're going to make sure that their citizens slash borrowers slash applicants knew what was going on, and if they didn't, they're going to raise, some issues. And the last one I got to tell you is I've done this several times with a regulator, particularly the OCC has come back, years later and has said that they didn't like loan officers or production people leaving and that they believe that there was improper transfer of information, and they call it an unsafe, unsound practice, and they've taken, enforcement actions.
Well, years later, that's kind of interesting. Andy Schell, who is with me as a partner in our firm, is working. Actually, we just got invited to be expert witnesses on another lawsuit in this exact area. So I'd like to toss the mic to Andy because we're boning up on this very fast because it's definitely something we're getting directly involved on as expert witnesses. Andy?
Yeah, thanks, Dave, and great to have you on the show, Dave. Really appreciate you taking the time. This is a really, really interesting topic for me. When I was president of a mortgage company, we had an issue that came up, and I know Joe had an issue as well with the company where he was running. And one of the things that I've always wondered about, because it seems really fuzzy to me, and if you could help me understand better, what law applies to this kind of activity?
Well, let me answer it in a sort of litigator way. Let me tell you what the sort of principles that are at play here. I mean, you're talking about people coming to a company and what kind of restrictions they may have, or people leaving a company and what kind of restrictions they may have. And so there's a principle in the law, and it's always going to be state law. And so it's going to vary between states. But the general principle that's going to apply is, people have a right, whether you call it a constitutional right or a state law right, to earn a living. And courts recognize that. And so the principle you have when you're trying to enforce restrictions on someone coming to your company or leaving your company is courts are going to be loath to say, hey, that guy's got to make, that man or woman's got to be able to make a living. The opposite or the other consideration that it's played against is you let them into your company if they were a current employee who's now left or coming in, but mostly the ones that left. You let them into your company. They were in a position where they had access to proprietary information. You're entitled to keep some restrictions on that. And so that's the interplay in any one of these cases. The person's right to make a living and move on. And it's, we don't have, you can't make somebody work for you. But also the right to say, well, wait a minute, when I had him in my company, I wanted him to, have access to proprietary information, to customer list, and those kind of things. That's mine. And where you end up with an immediate dispute is, the one that always seems to come in my case is, who got that information? Who did it belong to? Did it belong to the loan officer? Did he go out and find it all on his own? Or did it belong to the company because they gave it to him? And the answer is never A or B. It's always some combination thereof. And that's the recipe for disaster.
Well, this may be too specific of a question that I want to digress just slightly on. In this is, and one of the things that we hear about all the time is, if the loan officer takes the application, the loan officer thinks, well, the application is mine. If I'm leaving to go to another company, I'm taking it with me because it's my pipeline. The company goes, you got that application because you were working for me, you used my computer, you used my tools, you used my name and my reputation to be able to get that application. Is there a solid line we can draw to say, if you were an employee of a mortgage company, you take an application, that application is the mortgage company's?
The answer is no. And I'm chuckling because that's why we have litigators.
Good job, security. Huh?
Right. And that's the first part. But there are answers to that question, or at least there are guideposts. One place to look is the agreement you're operating under, whether it's the former agreement, probably the one when he took the application, his employment agreement, usually or sometimes that's spelled out. And it will specifically say, I'm giving up everything when I walk out the door and I take nothing, at which point it leans more to one side, of that line. If it's silent, you know, there's your factual dispute. Someone's going to say, well, wait a minute, I did all the work. They can't take that from me. The employer generally has a little bit more of an advantage when someone works for a company. They're going to have sort of, you know, the thought thinking that it probably is the employer's business. But that's just a fact, and it's a fact that's in dispute, and people can come in with different scenarios and say, well, you know, that should not apply in my case. I can't tell you an answer, nor would I want to, but you hit the nail on the head. That's why you need to look at these things either coming or going, and I mean coming too. You bring somebody on, you should be looking at their prior employment agreement. That's where you get into trouble, is if you don't look, and the first time you hear about certain covenants or reps that they gave to their prior employers when it's tacked on as the first exhibit to their lawsuit. That's a bad position to be in.
So is that one of the ways that I can protect or minimize the risk of these issues?
Absolutely. And it's the best way is know who you're bringing on and where they came from. I mean, this in the litigator world, this is a recipe for litigation. You know, somebody leaves a company, there's going to be hard feelings generally. Few times do you have amicable departures. There could be significant dollars at stake. You know, they're probably competitors because they're in the same business. And right now you're in perhaps a diminishing marketplace for, you know, applicants. All those things are leading to, you know, somebody's going to say on one side or the other, this is worth my time to stop it.
Well, it sounds like we need to get you to review all our agreements.
and that's the thing is, and I try to tell people, look, if you're going to fight somebody, you know who you're fighting. And so let's say you hire on people and you say, well, you know, they shouldn't be tied to all these restrictions from their past employer. They have a right to earn a living, and, you know, it's just a better opportunity with my company. Well, that's fine, but you should understand where they're coming from and look at your own operation and say, well, what would I feel like if my biggest branch left? And then you say, well, I'd probably feel pretty bad about that. And say, well, what have I done to prepare myself for that in terms of protecting my proprietary information, protecting, you know, resolving these issues to the extent that I can in terms of, you know, whose ox is getting gored, as one judge used to tell me, you know, how he decided cases. That's what you got to figure out.
And it boils down to what's going to happen in the courtroom. This is just such a great discussion because I got a whole bunch of questions. I know Joe's going to be lined up here. We're going to take a quick break, but we got more questions when it comes to the potential liability that gets into it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Got David Souders of the law firm Wiener, Brodsky, Sidman, and Tider with us. Good to have him with us talking about the risk associated with recruiting, whether you're being recruited or if you are the recruiter. This is great information. One of the things, I want to toss the mic to Joe in just a minute, but one of the things that you just brought up, David, that was really interesting. If you had a loan officer, if I'm the recruiting company and I'm recruiting a loan officer, can I ask them to bring in their agreement so I can read it, or is it their responsibility? I want to make sure, is there a bright line on that?
No, you can certainly ask him to bring in his agreement. I mean, somebody coming to your company discloses a lot of information, and there's nothing proprietary about that employment agreement that he should be holding back on. I mean, if I was trying to hire someone, they said, "Well, I can't show you my agreement," that would tell me a lot.
So you have the right to ask for that. So there is no issues. You're not crossing a line by asking to review that another company's agreement in that particular case.
That's exactly right. And you better be careful.
Yeah, that's good. Joe, let's get it over to you. I know you've got some questions and got a lot of your customers listening in. Go ahead.
Dave, I wanted to go back to something you said early on about the OCC coming back years later against it. And it sounded to me like you're saying they're coming back against the loan originator who might have left an OCC regulated company. Am I right in that?
Correct. They go back.
Okay.
They can go back against the company that they left because they could say that they have failed to protect, adequately their information. But certainly,
and so,
against the loan officers, yes.
And so the LO should do what to make sure that does not happen?
They better adhere to all the requirements. And the OCC, all the banks that are, particularly the banks, have lengthy, employment agreements, handbooks. The handbook is incorporated into their employment contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into the handbook, and there's lengthy chapters about protecting, client information. So it's very burdensome when you deal with heavily regulated entities like banks because they say, well, everything in my manual is incorporated, and they tend to have lengthy manuals.
So it's
an issue.
So if they were to take a download of the customers that are in this database of the origination system that are their customers, and they were to download that and take it out on a disk, would that be generally something they could get in trouble for?
Yes. And
okay.
I can say that just because I've seen several handbooks coming from regulated entities, and they have a lengthy discussion about what they consider their information. And in a way, it's really unfair, Joe. I mean, the loan officer creates his own database, creates his own client base. Then they go to work for one of these entities. That becomes the, sort of information that belongs to, let's say, the bank. And it's
mm-hmm.
difficult to extricate that back out. And if you just walk out, you could end up in an investigation at the very least, because the bank's going to say, well, this got taken away from me.
Right.
We don't think it was proper.
Wow.
But if you had a Rolodex of cards, you'd be fine in taking that.
Don't
no?
put it down.
Question.
It's, and that's, again, in all honesty, it's the fact issue. If somebody
mm-hmm.
was, annoyed enough, they might try that too.
Wow.
It's hard on the individual LOs, especially where, for example, they're hired on as bringing their own client database. They could protect themselves. They could, when they come over to that entity, they could say, you understand as part of their employment agreement, this is mine, not yours. That would be very helpful.
That's mm-hmm. a great idea. Great suggestion.
Well, but then you separate that between that was yours when you came, but what did you develop while you were here?
Exactly.
That's right.
And how did you develop it?
Well, all right, Dave, let's put ourselves in the mind of the company that they come to. And as they're asking these people to sign new employment agreements with them, maybe one of those issues is the database of customers that they have at the time. But what should the company that they're coming to prevent them from doing or prevent them from bringing such that they could not be sued?
Well, they should start with the obvious and then sort of work down to what their level of risk is. The most obvious thing is if you walk out with somebody else's manuals and things that have, internal use only stamped all over them, you're asking for trouble. If you then, so that's the first thing. If you walk out with anything that's obviously proprietary, you're running a huge risk, and I want to come back to the risk before I run out of time about what you're in for. Then Then you go next to the next obvious thing, which is, you know, customers and applicants. And then you should look at that and ask the hard questions of the person that's bringing it to you, saying, you know, I've looked at your employment agreement. It is or it isn't covered. If it's covered, then, you know, the answer may be obvious. But if it's not covered, you should probe that and say, you know, where did you get this stuff? And you know, ask yourself the question, if not directly to them, how am I going to be sure that somebody's not going to come after me and say, you took this? I mean, it's really, you should have a frank conversation because, and let me just jump in, if you get into litigation, you know, let me just say, you're going to get bills for attorney's fees from your side. This is a breach of contract. If there's a breach of a rep and they, you know, they're going to sue you along with the loan officer, they're going to ask for their attorney's fees. And what you're going to get is someone going through your system to find out if you have their stuff.
Oh, wow.
And that is what shuts
even
down
if you,
companies.
Even when you win, you lose is what I hear you saying.
Absolutely.
Even if you win, you still lose because of the costs involved.
I'm sorry.
The big thing is always going to be somebody's pipeline, and that is very much an asset of the company that you're leaving, but it's also what's going to generate revenue for the individual over the next few months. Is there a point at which an application can be moved without getting in trouble? Is it before it's locked? If it's locked, you know, and you take it, you're obviously creating a hardship on the company you're leaving. But at what stage in the process is there any comfort in saying, you know, this is my deal, I'm going to take it to my new company?
When I signed up for this, I told David I could dance. And so I'm going to dance. No, there is no answer. Your agreement may draw a line, you know, that you're bound by. Anything where there's no agreement, because let's just say the agreement does resolve the issue. If there's no agreement, I think it depends on, you know, how much people want to make a big deal about it. I mean, earlier in the process, more likely it's all the LO. Later in the process, more likely the company. And then the rest of it is sort of a continuum. And look, nobody's going to sue over $10. I say that, but I've handled suits over $10. But, you know, it depends on the size and the amount of money.
And so one originator coming over might not be a big deal at all, but three or four branches coming at one time could create a whole different degree of risk for you.
And not only that, but you take one originator, they may have covenants or reps in there that they're not going to talk anybody else into leaving, and you take the second one, and all of a sudden somebody's going to say, hey, you violated that.
All right. Can I ask one more question regarding something that was specific to my own issues in the past? And that was, if you are an employee of a company and you're being pursued by somebody to move, when do you breach your duties to the company you currently work for? And should you as an individual be concerned about talking to the company you're moving to, but maybe more importantly, talking to others in your company about moving with you, like a branch move is an orchestrated move.
Right. Again, you know, I'm like any good lawyer, I would say first thing you do is look at your personal employment agreement. Do you have any covenants or reps in there that say, if I leave, you know, what are the restrictions on me moving? If they include, for example, taking anybody with you, that's a problem. If they include, for example, you know, you may have agreed not to compete directly in the marketplace for some period of time, then that could be a problem. So you look there first. In terms of trying to decide when you feel like you have your duty of loyalty to your current company, the short answer is it's a state-by-state issue. But I think, you know, reasonable people would look at it and say, you know, I can talk to people about the marketplace. I can talk about other opportunities because that's, you know, I have a right to earn a living. At the point where you are committed to leaving, you know, something has to be said. And you shouldn't allow that to be a long period of time. You know,
it's just such a big topic. I'm listening, as I look across all the listeners that are dialed in, I know there's even 10 times more that are listing on a streaming basis. And I can just hear the stress in their tones as they listen away, if that's possible, discern our audience out there. I mean, there's a lot of people looking to make moves, and they're going, and some just made moves, David, and they're going, oh my gosh, did I do this? What have I done? And there's creating a lot of anxiety on this topic. It's so important, folks. Starting, what has Dave said? Let's kind of get to a summary on this, because you've laid out a lot of information. Number one, the most important thing is to start with, if you're looking to make a move, the most important thing, David, correct me if I got this wrong, is look at the agreement you have in place with the company you're about to leave. Is that right? Is that the best
Absolutely.
Place to start?
Absolutely.
And then the next, and then looking at making a move to where you're going, considering another opportunity, is, you know, what is their, what are their policies? I guess another way to look at the one, as I look back at this, I'm thinking out loud and doing this very extemporaneously, thinking about the company you're leaving, is do they have a track record of suing people? And if they are, then you ought to probably just sit down and handle it above board as clean as possible and watch communication with other employees. I can feel a lot of our loan officer, I mean, a lot of loan officer listening audience out there on the production side, David, are just kind of going, I don't know what to do. I mean, what can they do, and what's the best practices to follow here with just in about, if you can do it in about 60 seconds?
Well, I can't other than what you've told them, because it, you know, when they signed up with the company they work for, they made certain agreements. They have to live by those generally. Here's another thing we didn't even talk about, which is what do you do about agreements that are overreaching? Because there is a whole body of case law out there where people signed agreements that said you shall not work for 5 years. A lot
yeah,
of states
yeah, that's way overreaching.
Say,
yeah.
That's not legitimate, and they'll strike the whole thing. But some states will say that's not legitimate, and I'll put a reasonable time period on it. That's dicey. But yeah, look at your agreement and get advice.
David, the most important thing is a lot of people don't enter into agreements without reading the darn things. I mean, that's great for job security for guys like you that are out there, and you're there to help many that have stepped in it or gotten themselves in trouble, whether it's their fault or their own and they've done everything right or not. It does not mean you're not going to get yourself into some litigation. But there are some real obvious things. Read the agreements before you sign the darn things. Get some legal counsel. Weiner Brodsky, Seidman and Kider is just one of the outstanding firms out there. I know we probably have created more questions, David, in people's minds. What's the best way for them to get a hold of you if they want to talk to you or one of your staff about issues that they're facing right now?
Oh, listen, we're on the web. We have a web page. They can certainly contact any of us through there. You know, our number is 202-628-2000. You put my name on your web page so people could find me. Hey, you know, I'm happy to talk to anybody about these things. It's a tough issue. And listen, David, if you're going to have a litigator on your call, I mean, you're going to throw out anxiety to start with, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we appreciate you being with us so much, David, and taking the time. Yeah, you're right. But this is a present-day reality, and we are already been retained on one lawsuit. We've got several more that have contacted us to be expert witnesses. And that's where for those of you who don't know what an expert witness is, that's when we get brought in as independent third parties to comment on or make opinions about best practices or someone's practices. And we work with firms like David's firm and Mitch's firm to help them through this and be that witness on their behalf and be an advocate, so to speak, beyond the attorney that you've retained. So anyway, go out to WBSK.com. Is that the website, I believe? Do I have that right? www.wbsk.com, and you can look at David's bio out there. I recommend it, and get some advice before you get in trouble, folks. Do not wait until whether you're recruiting or thinking about making a move, get some advice. And this firm is probably one of the best ones I have found to get out there and work with our clients and work with people that are really trying to stay out of trouble. It's one of the things that impressed me so much when I met with you guys there in your office. I really appreciate you, David, taking the time. We're out of time, and we want to just say thank you again And folks, next week we have Toni Moss will be coming on to us, AmeriCatalyst. She'll be talking to us about an exciting event that's coming up here shortly and really looking into the crystal ball where this mortgage industry is going. There's so many different forces moving around out there, and we'll be talking with Toni. She's a great good friend, and I am really excited to have her on that program. And then the week after that, we'll be broadcasting from Chicago at the MBA conference. Folks, have a great week. Also, go out to lickitonlending.com and check out the website. Love to hear from you. Have a great week, everyone. Look forward to talking to you next week.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.